From the City of Angels, near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Up next, Mark Shaw, one of our favorite guests, joins us. Denial of Justice, Dorothy Kilgallen, Abuse of Power, and the most compelling JFK assassination investigation in history. And, of course, you know he wrote the book, The Reporter Who Knew Too Much, about Dorothy Kilgallen as well. She was the former What's My Line television star from years ago and the media icon. And Mark is next with us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Mark Shaw back with us, former criminal defense attorney, legal analyst for CNN, ESPN, the USA Today. Mark is an investigative reporter, author of many books, including a couple I just mentioned. We'll talk about them again. He's a member of the American Society of Journalists and Authors, has written for USA Today, Huffington Post, and the Aspen Daily News as well. And he's got some new information about the Dorothy Kilgallen case. Mark, welcome back. Always good to have
you. Thank you. It's a privilege to be on your show again, George. Thanks.
For people who don't know who Dorothy Kilgallen was, let's go back a few years and talk about her. She was a great television star on What's My Line. Mm-hmm. She was a reporter, a syndicated columnist in the gossip column. Frank Sinatra couldn't stand her. But tell us a little bit more about her.
Well, she's amazing, and how many people I've heard from around the world who've gotten to know Dorothy now. She kind of disappeared from view for about 50 years, but, you know, she was a college dropout who rose to fame. She had a column you talked about, syndicated to 200 newspapers across the country. She had a radio show she co-hosted every day, listened to by about a million people. She covered the important trials of that time in the 50s and 60s, Dr. Sam Shepard, which became the fugitive movie, Lindbergh baby kidnapping case. The New York Post called her the most powerful female voice in America, and it's amazing how many people have said we wish we had a reporter like Dorothy today, because she would be the role model for the kind of reporter we want, the ones that have integrity, the ones that go out, like you, George, that go out and find the facts and then, you know, go ahead and expose those instead of some sensational headline and then push some facts to that. So Dorothy's to be admired, and unfortunately, as you know, she covered the JFK assassination. That was her most famous case, and that's what led to her death in 1965.
They found her dead in her room and claimed that she may have had an overdose, alcohol, and you never thought that was the right story.
Well, you know, I was thinking the other day, you know, I've looked at this for about 10 years now, research on Dorothy and the JFK assassination, and I've tried to kind of at times do what Dorothy would do, investigate it like Dorothy would investigate it. And I think if she had, we can just say quickly that she was, the most credible reporter to cover the JFK assassination, and we'll get into that in a minute because it's important. I found some new facts for you. But she was at the Ruby trial. She interviewed Jack Ruby. And she was writing a book for Random House, and then as it got to November of 1965, she was going to expose what she had found, all of her evidence, in a book for Random House. And unfortunately then, on November 8th, she was found in a bedroom she didn't sleep in, a bed she didn't sleep in, wearing her makeup, eyelashes, and a false hairpiece. And they quickly concluded that Dorothy had died of an overdose of barbiturates. Well, as you know, George, through the autopsy, inspection of it and everything, I've proven that there was a homicide. There's no question about it. There was a staged death scene, no investigation of any kind. Nobody stood up for Dorothy and said, hey, you know, she doesn't have a drug problem. She's not an alcoholic or anything. It's sad. But she disappeared, as I say, until I learned about her in about 2007, I believe, when I was working on another book, and then I took off, and I've been fighting to get her the justice she deserves ever since.
I remember Bennett Cerf, of course, who was also on What's My Line, was the founder of Random House, and they were close.
He was the one that hired her to write the book, and on the last night of her life, she showed him part of the manuscript that she had finished and wanted to complete for publication by that publishing house.
Well, there's no doubt Dorothy Kilgallen was stepping on toes as she was doing her investigations. There were a lot of people in the Kennedy case, which we'll get into, that she was investigating, and I think she was really close, don't you?
Well, that's why we went ahead and published the second book. denial of justice. It's for people that read the first book and those that didn't. But I was able to come up with new evidence. I found the butler's daughter, Dorothy's butler's daughter in New York City, who was able to give me, she lived in the townhouse with Dorothy and was able to give me insights into Dorothy's life and times, the lavish parties, all of that. Also some information about FBI agents being in the townhouse the morning that Dorothy died. We found some connections between the Marilyn Monroe death and Dorothy's death, their obsession, both of them, along with JFK, about the about UFOs. Dorothy never bought the fact that Marilyn committed suicide, and so that then led me to something that, George, I can't even emphasize how important this is, because I've been able to really now find out why Dorothy was in such danger as November of 65 arrived. And the first thing we have to look at, I was able to get a copy of the 2,000-page Ruby trial transcripts. A reader had picked up the reporter who knew too much. He got in touch with me and asked me if I wanted a copy. He sent them. And for anyone who wants the truth about the assassinations, you got to go there first, because that sworn testimony within, what, a few months of the JFK assassination, and what I found was just shocking. First of all, there was a testimony by a gentleman who was a salesman at the Dallas Morning News, and he's asked about whether Jack Ruby was around the morning that JFK was killed. And he said, yes, he was in our offices. He got there about 12 o'clock, and he left about 12:30. And with us, he was looking out a window, George, that faced Daley Plaza, and he was there until 12:35. And as anybody who's followed the JFK assassination knows, JFK was killed at 12:25. That means that Jack Ruby was actually watching the assassination as it took place. Therefore, he had to have known about it to begin with. There is a parking lot manager across from the Ruby Carousel Club who testifies that Ruby came over the day before he shot Oswald and was talking on the phone to someone asking about when Oswald would be transferred and saying, I will be there. There's testimony that Ruby admitted he had gotten into the Dallas Police Department basement based on making like a reporter with a pencil and notebook, and the Dallas police had helped him get in there. That's just primary source witness testimony that blows away any possibility of this Oswald alone theory, and I would really suggest people take a look at these excerpts in the book. They're on my website. You can find them on the Internet. But please, take a look there. And that's why we now know Dorothy was in the front row, George, of that trial, and that's what she knew. That's what she had put in her files, and that's one of the things she was going to put in the book she was writing for Random House.
And the gentlemen clubs that Ruby apparently owned, weren't they really owned by some of those who have been named as possible suspects in the JFK murder?
I'll tell you what, you're so perceptive. I was able to find a new witness who actually had been at the Carousel Club, who had interviewed and been close friends with many of the strippers who were there, and they all talked about the fact that they were scared to death to talk about Ruby shooting Oswald afterwards, because all of those gentlemen's clubs were managed and controlled by the mafia. So you're right on point with that. So I just hope people will stop and think about that kind of thing. The second thing that we found was, why was Dorothy in such danger, of course, but also she believed that somebody was leaking her evidence that she had compiled to what she called the wrong people, and that's what she had told her hairdressers and everyone. Well, the only person who was close to Kilgallen when she died was this journalist named Ron Pataki. And he was 22 years older than Kilgallen. She had kind of had a romance with him, but she was sharing her JFK assassination information with him, and she suspected him of leaking it. Well, it wasn't too long ago when a witness, a primary source, got in touch with me, a man in Las Vegas, who told me that he had heard about Pataki at the time and said, you know, he was in trouble. He got in trouble himself and with the wrong people, using that term again. And there were people in the underworld and rogue agents, government agents, who got him out of trouble, and then they squeezed him to make him leak Kilgallen's information, what she was writing and what she was going to put in her book for Random House. And when Pataki told them that she had connected Carlos Marcello, Ruby Oswald, and the CIA being involved in JFK's death, in his words, George, what he said, Dorothy Kilgallen was dead.
Wow.
It's, again, a primary witness who talks about exactly what the danger was for Dorothy as November of 1965 approached. She had all that information from the Ruby trial transcripts. She had whatever Ruby had told her, and now her information had been leaked to the wrong people, and those people could not let her write that book.
Is Pataki alive, or is he dead?
He's 84 years old, and he's alive in Columbus, Ohio. And if you want to get into that right now, you know that just recently I've taken a very extreme action, one that
sure
I did
have.
Not want to take.
You want his DNA?
Yes. I have filed a petition in Westchester County, New York, the Supreme Court there. Dorothy Kilgallen is buried very close to Westchester, asking that the court permit the exhuming of Dorothy Kilgallen's body for DNA testing, that it be compared with that of Ron Pataki. Ron Pataki has said to two relatives, in fact, I have to thank you again, George. One of your listeners, Ken Edwards, called me after I was on the air and told me that Pataki had admitted to two relatives that he was the last person to see Kilgallen alive.
Hold on, Mark. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and pick it up right there. We'll take calls with you next hour. Mark Shaw with us, latest book that came out in November of 2018, Denial of Justice. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Mark Shaw with us. We'll take calls with Mark next hour. Mark, I noticed that Ron Pataki is on Facebook. You should be friends with him.
Well, he's a shifty character, I'll tell you that. I should go back just a second and tell you, you know, the paranormal aspect of this is certainly there. Dorothy, since I first learned about her, has guided me along. She's led me to evidence. She's done all kinds of things. And, in fact, when I was thinking about what to do to break through this logjam that I've got with not getting her the justice she needs, I kind of came up with a DNA idea. Let's go back just a second because you know that I did get the New York District Attorney's Office to look into Dorothy's death. They
yep.
promised a thorough investigation and then didn't investigate hardly any of the witnesses, including Ron Pataki. I then tried to get the U.S. Attorney in New York to review the case and got nowhere. So finally, I was frustrated by all this, and I started to think about what would Dorothy do to try to see if we can't seal this whole evidence package against Pataki. He not only swore that he was the last person to see her alive, you remember he wrote some poems that have evidence in there about how she was killed, how she was poisoned with barbiturates, only the killer could know. There's all this evidence against him, and so finally I decided to go ahead and file this action. It's a dual action to ask the Supreme Court in Westchester County, New York, to exhume Dorothy's body for DNA purposes, and also order Pataki to give a DNA sample. Now, people might be thinking, wait a minute, she died way back in 1965. Can there be DNA still on her remains? And I went for the expert that anybody would go to who wanted to get the best, and that's Dr. Cyril Weck.
He is the best, and he also looked at the Kennedy assassination.
There you go. And I talked to Dr. Weck, and he gave me some ideas. He said, you know, it depends on how she was embalmed. It depends on how they got her ready for the funeral. And then I presented to him some confusion about the facts at that time, and he assured me that there is the great possibility that DNA could still be on her body. We know it could still be on Ron Pataki's, but he said to me, you know, something that really made me feel great. He said, Mark, if you can get the authority to have her body exhumed, I will supervise the retrieving of the DNA and comparing it with Ron Pataki's. And so that meant a lot to me because he is so credible, and I think he's the right person to be able to do this if I can get permission.
He is the best, to be sure. He wrote a book with a friend of mine, Charles Bosworth Jr., about the JonBenet Ramsey case.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He's one of the best.
Yeah.
He truly
so
is.
So we'll see what happens. I filed the petition. I've served all of the parties, including the DA and the U.S. Attorney, Kilgallen's grown children, who I don't know whether they will approve of what I'm doing or not. Pataki also was served last week with the papers. And so, Now it'll be up to a judge to decide whether this extreme action. And I would never have taken this action, George, if the DA and the U.S. attorney back there had done their jobs.
Right.
Because
right.
There's this overwhelming evidence against Pataki. And what bothers me and hopefully will bother the court is that if we don't do something here to put him in that room with Dorothy Kilgallen when she was died, he's going to get away with murder because there's little doubt that he was involved one way or another. And we now know that he leaked that information to the wrong people, and that's what caused her death. So I'm hopeful. I think before I got on, you said that optimists live longer. Well, I'm a true optimist here because I think the odds of getting this done are probably against me, but I got to give it a try.
Has Pataki ever picked up the phone and said, Mark, lay off me. Stop this.
I actually interviewed him twice. I've been straight with him. I've sent him both books. I interviewed him twice. And it's interesting because I would compile all of these things that were inconsistent. He said he was in Columbus, Ohio when Dorothy died. Then we found out that he admitted that he may have been in New York. And there's a lot of inconsistencies there through primary sources. But at one point, George, I said, you know, Ron, let's level with each other. You know and I know that you were involved with Dorothy's death one way or another. Come on. Tell me. I want to know what happened back there. If you weren't involved, fine, but tell me what happened. And as I told the investigator for the New York District Attorney's Office, I said there was a pregnant pause, and I thought he was going to admit his complicity in Dorothy's death. He didn't, and unfortunately, that investigator with the DA was not allowed to investigate Pataki at all, and so we never got to that point. I'm hoping what he will do is that he will get a lawyer, and he'll go to that lawyer, and the lawyer will say, look, Ron, let's level. Were you involved in this some way? If you were, let's work this out, because otherwise you're going to end up in a courtroom in Westchester County, New York, and you're going to be asked all about this. Well, if you had something to do with it, let's go to a DA and admit that and see if we can't get the truth told about what happened to Kilgallen. That's what I'm hoping.
Now, there's no question, too, though. People knew Carlos Marcello and Santo Trafficante, names that were implicated in the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah, what you need to do, and again, I go back to Dorothy as my inspiration, and I said that in the petition. You have to look at the detective's best friends, motive, means, opportunity, and benefit from the crime. And you know, George, as well as I do, that the 1960 election, Joe Kennedy knew they were going to lose unless they won West Virginia and Illinois.
That's
so
right.
He made a deal with the devil that if the mobsters, Giancana, Marcello, all of them, would help him win those states, they would leave them alone when they got in the White House. Well, they helped, and then what did Joe do? He double-crossed those people. He appointed Bobby Kennedy attorney general. I have a witness who was right there when that happened. And Joe and Bobby became attorney general, and what's the first thing he did?
He went after the mob.
Guys.
Yep.
Marcello especially, and you can't mess around with them.
He had Marcello picked up and dumped in South America, didn't he,
in the jungles down there, and then prosecuted him for racketeering and all of that. Well, Marcello's not a dumb person. His back was against the wall. If you kill Bobby Kennedy, who he hated, then John Kennedy will come after you with everything the government has. But if you kill John Kennedy, then Bobby Kennedy will be powerless. And that's exactly what happened. And that's exactly what Dorothy Kilgallen, she was a smart woman. You know, she many times they said she was better in the courtroom than the lawyers were. And she figured that all out. And unfortunately, that's what cost her life.
I'm wondering if Jimmy Hoffa had anything to do with that because, you know, as you know, he hated Bobby Kennedy. He hated the Kennedys.
Yeah.
They were going after him as well, and he knew these other people.
Well, he did, and yet, as you know, George, I'm very careful. I don't speculate in my books.
No, you don't.
I'm very careful to get primary sources. I could never put that together. Did he know about it? Did he know about the assassination of JFK? I can't imagine that he didn't.
He was happy about it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, nobody hated Bobby Kennedy more than he did. There's that great story, I think, about him being in the offices of Bobby in New York telling him to lay off, and Bobby said, hell with you, and he actually tried to strangle him before they took his hands off of Bobby's neck. So nobody hated more the Kennedys, and Bobby especially, than Hoffa, but I've never been able to connect him to the actual machinations of JFK's death.
That's an amazing story indeed. Now back to Dorothy and her situation.
Yeah.
If she died from being murdered, Explain how you think it would have happened in that room.
Well, I'm going to say, and I haven't been able to put all this together, but I'm working on it. I think Marilyn Monroe, the way she died, may have been a dress rehearsal for how Dorothy died. There are similarities there, as you know. Both found in bedrooms, both a barbiturate overdose, all of that.
Yep.
What I believe happened is that Pataki finally, they told him, look, we own you now. We own you, and we need to be able to get rid of Kilgallen before she writes this book. So you help us set her up. I think he met her the night before at the Regency Hotel, a few blocks from where she lived. We can pretty well place him there. I think he she had some drinks there. He could have put barbiturates in her drink there. Otherwise, he would have taken her home. He probably was joined by a couple guys that were these agents who were going to help him do what he needed
right.
to do.
Right. I was going to say he could have opened the door for them.
Exactly. And that's they could have then put that poison in her drink there at the townhouse. Then basically what they did is they looked around, I believe, for that manuscript that she had for her JFK file that had everything in it. Both have never been found. And one way or another, they took those because we then know from the butler's daughter, which is a piece of the equation here, that FBI agents or agents, trying to act as FBI agents were in the townhouse the morning Dorothy died, and they were confiscating her files and her documents and taking them into the street. So all of that kind of fits together now, and I feel much better about the fact that I can pretty well dictate what happened from the time she was at the Ruby trial all the way up until she died that night, that tragic death that took her away from us.
Where was her husband, Richard Colmar, during this situation?
Well, that's a sad situation in many ways. Richard was a successful Broadway producer when she met him. He fell on hard times. He had some failures there with a couple restaurants, and he became an alcoholic. They became estranged. Dorothy, I, in the book, I use, in my both books, it's warts and all. Dorothy ran around. She, she had a relationship with Johnny Ray, who was the singer, Little White Cloud That Cried.
Mm-hmm.
She then had the relationship with Pataki. And both books are set up as true crime murder mysteries. I mean, you mentioned Frank Sinatra. He could have knocked her off. He hated her so much for what she'd said about him. Richard is a suspect. There are others as well, including J. Edgar Hoover, who she believed had covered up the JFK assassination, all of those. But, there was one thing that was interesting that you would find at the funeral, actually. Dorothy's mother pointed at Richard and said, "You killed my daughter, and I will prove it."
Oh, geez.
That accusation was never followed up. I don't believe that he had the guts to have done it, but he very well could have because he knew. She told everyone she was scared. If the wrong people knew what I know about the JFK assassination, it cost me my life. She bought a gun, and she changed her will. And Richard may have felt like that, it was time for her to die before that will was changed. But I've never been able to really put together how he would have committed the murder.
Jack Ruby told Kilgallen something before he died.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think he told her?
Well, it's interesting. If you go to the DorothyKilgallenStory.org, you're going to see all of these videotaped interviews. And the most shocking one is with Joe Tannehill, who is Melvin Belli's co-counsel representing Ruby.
Mm-hmm.
And he details how it happened, that Dorothy said that she had a message from Ruby's friend, a opera singer in San Francisco, and that was relayed to Ruby, and that she wanted to talk to him, and finally that was agreed. You can see in denial of justice exactly where they sat in the courtroom, right behind the railing. They talked twice. I believe that she, we don't have an account of that because her file was missing, but where did she go right after Ruby talked to her? She didn't stay in Dallas to look at LBJ as being involved in JFK's death. She didn't go to Washington, D.C. She didn't go anywhere else. She went to New Orleans. So I think Ruby admitted to her that, yes, he knew Oswald, and there's all kinds of evidence about that, and that Marcella was the one that masterminded the JFK assassination. And he tried to tell all of that to the Warren Commission, but they wouldn't listen to him, and they didn't even subpoena Dorothy to come before the Warren Commission. In fact, there's an interesting a letter that I found. Again, I think Dorothy kind of led me to this. It's a letter from J. Edgar Hoover to the Warren Commission Council, and they are upset because Dorothy had printed the Ruby testimony before the Warren Commission before it was supposed to be released. So they sent these two agents over to her home. And I have this visualization of these two bulky agents and little Dorothy sitting there, and they're interrogating her. And they come back to Hoover, and in that letter it says that Dorothy told, they ask about her source, and that's where her famous quote is, "I would rather die than give you my sources." So, there's that connection where Hoover was very, very upset with what Kilgallen had done, and obviously he could have been involved in her death. But I have a feeling that he stayed away from that, that it was more or less the Marcello people along with these rogue agents who actually committed the murder.
So Sarah Wecht is about 88 years old now, isn't he?
Oh, he's smarter than either one of us, George. I'll tell you that. At that age, he's just
still as sharp, huh?
Sharp as can be. And, what I'm interested in with him is, again, he's a man with integrity. He hasn't assured me that we're going to find anything there, but he said to me, I believe there's DNA available, and I used that in my petition in the very first paragraph because I hope it gives legitimacy to what is going to happen. George, I'm going to be castigated for what I'm doing. It's an extreme thing to do to bother Dorothy's remains. The family may be upset. Others have. I've already received some emails about how could you do this. Mm-hmm. I'm still interested in justice.
Well, then you still don't know if you're going to be able to exhume the body.
No, I don't. But even my doing it has made me quite unpopular with some people. And I believe that hopefully having Dr. Weck involved gives it legitimacy, that I'm after justice for Dorothy, and that we're hoping that this guy, Pataki, is not going to get away with murder. Now, the other thing I can hope is that the DA finally comes around and says, hey, we will do a thorough investigation, or the U.S. attorney does that. I want a grand jury investigation. And I think you want to talk a little bit about the Epstein case, because there is some similarity mm-hmm. to Dorothy's situation in 1965 when she died.
Yeah, we'll talk about that at the top of the hour
sure.
with phone
so,
calls.
Dr. Weck, bless him. Hopefully the court will be impressed that somebody with the integrity and credentials he has, if he's involved with a guy like me, out there trying to do what I can, that this is a legitimate request, and hopefully they'll look at it seriously.
What would Pataki do if he went to law enforcement and said, look, I know who did this. Mm-hmm. I didn't have anything to do with it other than I knew these people.
Yeah, I don't think he may not have known, you see, what he told the wrong people was going to result in Dorothy's death. He may have thought they would scare her, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
If I was his lawyer, I'd walk him into a DA's office. He's 84 years old.
Cut a deal.
And I would say, let's work this out some way or another, and you probably could, whether they would have him plead to a misdemeanor or something else like that, or a felony or whatever, there'd be no jail time. And I've said to him in person, and I've said to him in a letter that I wrote to him when he was served with a petition, Ron, why don't you get this off of your chest? I know you have some guilt over this. We both do. Why don't you do the right thing here and let us know what happened to Dorothy Kilgallen, because you're the one that can
do
it.
Did he ever respond to you?
No.
What a story.
No, not yet. But I'm that optimist.
You are. And you don't let go. Mark, we'll talk about the Epstein case, which is just as bizarre, and then we'll take calls next on Coast to Coast AM. As we continue talking with Mark Shaw about the incredible story of Dorothy Kilgallen, his latest work, Denial of Justice, we'll take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Mark Shaw, with us. We will take your calls as well as we talk about the Dorothy Kilgallen case. Why are you so into this, Mark? You don't let go.
Well, first I want to say the petition to exhume her body is up on the Internet. People can find it. It's a matter of public record. It's on my website if they want to take a look and see what they think. It's all about history. I think for me, George, as well as justice. And I will tell you, denial of justice, the name came to me because we have actually four people there who were denied justice. JFK, of course, killed before his time.
Mm-hmm.
Lee Harvey Oswald never got a trial. Jack Ruby didn't get a fair trial. And Dorothy, of course, was killed and hasn't got the justice to today. So it's all about justice for me. I've always been somebody, doesn't matter who it is, doesn't matter if it's John Doe or Dorothy Doe or Dorothy Kilgallen, especially victims of crimes, I believe, have their rights. And it doesn't matter if they were killed last week or 55 years ago. And it's so obvious that Dorothy's rights as a victim were she never got those rights in 65. And so I just keep going with it because I feel strongly that she deserves that justice, and hopefully we can get it for her.
She'd be about 106 now, so I'm not sure she'd still be with us.
Well, I believe she knows what's going on. You know, again, people can, accuse me of being a little bit off my rocker, but I believe Dorothy knows what's going on here. She's led me to certain things. She's given me ideas and everything, and hopefully she approves of what I'm doing now. I hope that it will never come to having to exhume her body. I'm hoping the DA will act, or the U.S. attorney will act, or Pataki will confess his guilt, and we'll get to the truth that way. That's my hope.
Why did Frank Sinatra despise her so much?
Well, you know, Dorothy had a poison pen, again, with that column of hers, Voice of Broadway. You remember Noel Coward, of course, and he had I found an example for the new book, Denial of Justice, where he had a play come out on Broadway, and it was, hugely promoted and everything, and big money into it and everything. Well, Dorothy went to see it and didn't like it, and she put that in her column, and it closed 2 days later. She had that kind of power.
She did have the power. That's
and
true.
With Sinatra, she wrote a couple columns about his girlfriends and his affiliation with the mafia, calling the girlfriends bimbos. They were has-been actresses. He would take them to dumps. She just went on and on.
She was brutal to him.
Yeah, well, he was, but he didn't want to see that in print. And then she talked about him going to Cuba with the mobsters, all these kind of things. So he went after her. He called her the chinless wonder. If you look at Dorothy, she wasn't a beautiful woman. She was attractive, but, you know, he said she didn't have a chin. During his Las Vegas act, I heard you mention the Rat Pack with the Las Vegas act. At one point, he pulled out a keychain and said, I don't know what the configuration was, but said that what looked like her figure. And then at one point he said to the audience, if you run into Dorothy Kilgallen, please use a car.
Oh, jeez.
Brutal.
Those were the days, weren't they?
They were. It was a different time.
And newspapers were powerful then, Mark.
Well, people actually read the newspaper. They did. And, you know, 200 newspapers across the country, the Hearst chain.
That was huge.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, everybody waited to see what Dorothy was going to say about politics or entertainment or whatever. There's a photograph of her that I love, of her with Bette Davis at Warner Brothers. 4 years after she dropped out of college, she's with Bette Davis, and she's with Ernest Hemingway, and she's with all these people. And, you know, she knew everyone, and everybody wanted to be in her column as long as they were on the right side of her, of course. But, yeah, she was huge at the time. I compare her to the Oprah of today or Diane Sawyer or whatever. You know, she was of that ilk.
And Mark Lane, of course, you've heard of him.
Oh, yes. One of my great regrets is that I didn't go after finding him enough, and he finally died because he was a real friend to her.
He knew her. Yeah, he knew her well.
Shared information with him. She praised Rush to Judgment, his book. They were good friends, and I had done a lot of research on the friendship between them and some things like that. And then all at once, I finally found an address for him and a phone number, and when I called, he had passed away. I was really, I've always been regretting that.
Her interview with Ruby lasted 8 minutes. The guards apparently walked out of the room. She was alone with him. Is there any record of what he told her?
No, all we can go is by what she did afterwards. I wish there was. That's why they took that manuscript, and that's why they took that file that she had. I don't know, George. I still feel like that file is out there. I don't know if the government has it. I don't know if the DA found it. I don't know why the DA and the U.S. attorney and all these people are afraid of this case, why they won't look into it in a thorough way, why they won't go after Pataki, why won't they won't interview the 25 witnesses I've given them. I don't understand it exactly. There's something, you know, being covered up here. I don't know. I'm still hoping that we're going to get to the truth about this, and hopefully if we could find that file, maybe I could answer your question.
Well, maybe they realize what happened to her. They don't want it to happen to them, even though 99% of the players are dead now.
It's absolutely amazing. Family members, witnesses I found, 55 years later, they're scared to come forward. I found some cousins of Dorothy's through a contact in Arizona, and she told me they were so excited about my looking into this and investigating and everything, but they were private people and they didn't want to come forward. They were sure that she was murdered. Where were her reading glasses when she was found? I mean, they gave all these details, and they swore to her that they would not let me know how to get a hold of them. 55 years later, they're still concerned that somebody, you know, might cause them problems what Dorothy was involved in. And the reason way back when, George, was because everybody around there, her friends, colleagues, journalists, What's My Line people, they all knew who killed her. They all knew people who killed JFK were responsible for Dorothy's death, and they didn't want to be next.
And you talk about the possibility of some kind of correlation with the sexual predator Jeffrey Epstein, who they say killed himself. My jury is still out on that.
Yeah, well, I think it will be. When I first heard of that, I thought of Dorothy because I thought of the denials of justice that I just mentioned with the four people. And Epstein now joins that list because he didn't get a trial. And we have to give a trial to the worst of the worst. But it was interesting to me, and I just want to read you something quickly, what Dorothy wrote 6 days after JFK died. "The case is closed, isn't it? Well, I'd like to know how, in a big smart town like Dallas, a man like Jack Ruby, owner of a striptease honky-tonk, can stroll in and out of police headquarters in the Dallas County basement as if it was a health club at a time when a small army of law enforcers is keeping a tight security guard on Oswald. Security, what a word for it." And then she wrote, "Justice is a big rug. When you pull it out from under one man, a lot of others fall too." Well, you can almost substitute Epstein's name for Ruby in there, or Oswald in there. Because here they are with this security force. Well,
except in this case, I think Epstein was guilty of everything they've accused him of doing.
It may very well be, but he still has a right to a trial.
Yeah. Well, he had one.
Security force. They're supposed to be watching him. They know he has may have a tendency to commit suicide. For God's sakes, they found him, maybe a few days or a
before,
week earlier?
Two weeks before that.
They had things. He had marks on his neck. Somebody got to him. He was just like Oswald. He was just like Ruby. He was just like, you know, these people who could have squealed on some of the biggest profile people in the world in terms of them being involved with his being a sexual predator. And I'm telling you, George, when that happens, they're not going to let that occur. They can't let that occur. And I don't know what they'll find here, but at some point, hopefully, they'll figure out how in the world they got to this guy.
Are they even investigating it?
Well, the attorney general said that they can find no evidence of any possibility that there's foul play here.
Right. And they ruled it a suicide.
That sounds to me like J. Edgar Hoover in 1965.
All over again. Let's take some calls here for you.
Okay.
Michael in Virginia Beach, Virginia. You're up first, Michael. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, George. Mr. Shaw, Lyndon Baines Johnson had the greatest means, motive, and opportunity to plan the assassination of Kennedy and to cover it up afterwards.
That has come up before. Michael, you're a little foggy on the phone there, but we get the gist of that. Mark?
Well, here's the case. No question about it. Motive, especially. For God's sakes, he becomes president of the United States. So there's the benefit from the crime. I'm unlike an awful lot of other people. I've never been able to find the primary source connections between JFK and anyone else connected with the JFK assassination. I know there are people who believe that he had mafia connections and all of that, but it's not as straight a line, it's not as straight a connection as I can find between those people who had the motive, Marcello and those people, to get rid of JFK so Bobby could be polished. You may be right. It's just not something that I can prove.
Let's go to Linda in Windsor, Canada. Welcome to the show, right across the river from Detroit. Hi, Linda.
Hi. Hi, George. How are you?
Great.
And your guest, I wanted to tell you that you being on this case is a direct, I believe, Dorothy, she may not be here on this earth, but she is with us in the spirit sense. Mm-hmm. You have, you said you just had a curiosity or a guidance, and I do believe that you are being used because of your sensitivity, and I know I listen to you, and you're on the right track, and you're actually, you know, following with a humbleness and a clarity that's, I believe that you're going to get to the truth and to that one guy who you hope before he dies opens up to you. Mm-hmm. I believe hopefully that when that veil becomes thin, he'll realize how heavy his soul is, and part of the lighting to make the soul lighter would be, you know, confessing his sins to you, and I hope he reaches out to you. But you're doing a fantastic job, and doesn't matter how long it takes, but the truth has got to come out. And people like you who are sensitive to that, you just have that extra gene, that little bit part of you that can sense and see more than others.
Well, bless you. I appreciate that, Linda. And I should say, I mentioned that people have been criticizing what I'm doing, but there have been those who have sent me emails, and I will tell you one just quickly, George.
Sure.
This is a man who lives in Westchester County. I just had a chill as I say this. He visits Dorothy Kilgallen's grave twice a week, and he told me he'd say hello to her for me, and he really praised what I'm doing. He said he wasn't sure exactly if this was the right thing to do, but he felt like it needed to be done. So I appreciate Linda's talk, Linda's message, and those who have supported me. And hopefully, like she says, we will get to the truth here.
What do you think Dorothy was going to write in those books?
Oh, she told everyone, blabbermouth. She told everyone, this is the case of the century. I'm going to crack the JFK assassination. She told her hairdresser, you know, I know who killed the president and why.
Oh.
She just told everyone. She thought she was invincible, George. She was so powerful.
Didn't she know witnesses were being murdered and died?
Absolutely.
Jeez.
But she thought the only time she got scared was when and I think this may have happened by these people that ended up killing her. On Halloween of 1965, that'd be October, of course, there was a picture of her son in a newspaper there. We've never been able to find out which New York newspaper, but he was running across Central Park. And she woke up that morning, and the hairdresser said she was just frantic because she knew that somebody was following her son. And that's, I think, the only time that she bought a gun. She was really scared, but I think that scared her more than anything. But she just felt like she was invincible and that she could go on with this and tell everybody in the world that she was going to break this case wide open, and that's what caused her death.
I was 13 when all this happened, and I could remember watching Ruby shoot Oswald.
Mm-hmm.
But before that happened, a day or so before that, when they had arrested Oswald, and they're walking him around, and he said he was a patsy,
uh-huh.
I was 13, and I asked my mother, I said, Mother, what does that mean? What is a patsy?
Uh-huh.
And she said, well, it's somebody who is, tricked to be in a certain place and didn't do it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but that was a key to everything. Oswald saying, I'm a patsy.
Well, it was.
Assassin doesn't say that.
Then nobody was listening because J. Edgar Hoover was shouting, Oswald alone, Oswald alone. That's why we missed the Ruby Crowell transcripts. That's why the journalists. I found it's in Denial of Justice, a journal by one of the jurors. And the day that testimony came out that Ruby was watching the JFK assassination that took place, he would be there when Oswald would be transferred, there's not even a notation in there. J. Edgar Hoover brainwashed the American public. He brainwashed the trial jury. So we all missed it. Oswald was trying to say something there, but nobody was going to pay attention to it. And the other thing I want to mention, people should know, Dorothy gave up her life here. for trying to find the truth about what happened to JFK. And one of the reasons she did, and it's both in both books, is that when she went to the White House with Kerry, he made a big fuss over her little son, gave him a PT-109 pin, you know, praised him for bringing letters from his third grade class. And that in the book, it says, this is the man I remember, a tall man stooping over a little boy, praising him for bringing the letters. This is the man who was killed in Dallas. And I sent copies of the book and my a strong letter to Caroline Kennedy, because I wanted her to know about Dorothy and what Dorothy did to try to find the truth. Unfortunately, I've never heard back from her. But that's why Dorothy got into this. And you know, we didn't listen back way back then, but now hopefully the truth will come out.
The police officer who was killed in Dallas, apparently by Oswald, J.D. Tippit,
yeah.
I have heard stories that he knew Jack Ruby quite well.
Well, there's a story that, you know, an eyewitness said that Tippit and Oswald were in Ruby's Carousel Club. But that's one of those stories,
weird.
Again, I've never been able to confirm. I did find a great primary source witness in New Orleans who could confirm that Oswald and Marcella were together, also that Ruby was involved with them there. But I could never put them together with Tippit in that bar. Did it happen? I doubt that we'll ever know for sure. But, you know, it's very possible. There were some allegations that Tippit had relationships with Ruby and Marcello's underlings in Dallas. So those connections could have happened. But I don't think Dorothy ever proved that to be true either.
Do you think Oswald was there and had associates too?
Oh, no question that Oswald was involved in the JFK assassination, but to believe that he did this alone, you know, just makes no sense whatsoever. It's a ludicrous belief. But I think he was involved some way or another with the Marcello soldiers who were sent to do this. I don't have any doubt about that.
Next up, let's go to Jack in San Diego. Welcome to the program. Hi, Jack.
Yes, first of all, I hope your guest does an in-depth investigation into Jeffrey Epstein. And of course, that's contemporary, and that's where my interest lies. So I just wanted to tell you the things that I'm suspicious about when it comes to Epstein.
Uh-huh.
One is, he was supposed to be a money manager and for wealthy people. And we don't hear anything about any of his clients, his portfolio. We don't have any evidence that he ever made any investments. On the contrary, we've heard that he was running an extortion racket, that he may have been an asset for the CIA and the Mossad. And my question is, where's all the sex tapes? Because if he was blackmailing people, there'd be a lot of sex tapes.
Somebody's got them somewhere. We're coming up to the break. We'll come back, Mark, and talk about that. And there was one client, we'll talk about that he had, who was a billionaire. May have been his only client. We'll be back. And George Norrie back with you with Mark Shaw. And, of course, his websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Mark, back to Epstein for a moment. He had one client who fired him years ago, and that was the L Brand CEO, Les right. Wexner. And they own Bath and Body Works, Express, and Victoria's Secrets. The guy was loaded, but he fired Epstein, got rid of him.
Well, there's a lot of suspects here, you know, but anybody who had anything to do with Epstein, two things frightened them. Neither one was good. One would be there'd be trials, okay, so he's in the courtroom and he's going to testify supposedly and all of that and everything. That would have been terrible. And the other one's even worse, and that is he takes a plea agreement and offers up names of those people who were involved in this sex trafficking with him. So neither one of those could happen. And your listener said, you know, what about an investigation here? Well, you can't have an investigation by the government here because there are government officials of Bill Clinton and others who, you know, Richardson, others. You can't do that. You've got to have an independent grand jury investigation of what happened here. And if I were doing that, the first thing I'd look at are those eight staffers who were supposedly one for sure being with Epstein at all times. I'd watch their bank accounts down the line. to see a bit, because somebody had to have, some money had to exchange hands here for them to get into that cell and do what they needed to do at that particular point. But there's so many suspects with regard to this, and that gentleman, you know, you don't know what Epstein would have said, because again, as I say, even
That's
the
right.
worst of the worst have the right to a trial, and he never got one. So I don't know if you where you think it should be headed, George, but if I were looking at this, we need a grand jury, an independent grand jury, to take a look into his death.
Oh, no question. And also to look back and see how many people flew on his planes and for how long. I've heard all kinds of things.
Yeah, and, you know, what happens with these things, it's like with Dorothy's death. All what they said was, okay, she died of an overdose of barbiturates and alcohol, end of story. Now the attorney general comes out and says, there's no evidence of anything other than a suicide. End of story. You know, and now, you know, will there be investigations? Yes, possibly. But are they going to really go after this now when the highest officer, you know, in our Justice Department says there's no evidence of anything? This is what happens, unfortunately, in these cases. And you know, we don't get to the truth because of that, and that's a tragedy, just as it was in Dorothy's death.
Robert in Boston, Mass., east of the Rockies, welcome to the show. Robert, go ahead.
What do you mean, go ahead?
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
You start.
Goodbye. We don't have that kind of time. Tom in Colorado, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, hello. I just wanted to bring up Jim Marr's book, Crossfire, The Plot That Killed Kennedy.
Yes.
I had read this book last year or a couple years ago, and he really extensively researched Kennedy's assassination, probably more than anyone who ever lived, I think, as far as I can tell. And he came to the conclusion that there were so many different groups of people involved in this assassination, everybody from the federal government, state, local, law enforcement, Treasury Department was not happy that Kennedy was printing, told the Treasury Department to print its own money. So the Federal Reserve, I mean, they were even in on it quite possibly. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to see what your guest had to say about that.
Well, here's my viewpoint. I respect anybody who's written about this and researched it and everything, but here's the difference between them, me, and Dorothy Kilgallen. She was there. That's why I believe it's so important to rely on her research, which I have in both books. It's not me speaking, it's Dorothy speaking. And so, you know, she was there. She was at the Ruby trial. She wrote all of these different columns. Those are in both books and up at the DorothyKilgallenStory.org. You can read what she said. And she was at the front at the trial, in the front row, all of that. So I think she's the most credible witness we have to what happened. And I will tell you this also, and I will bet you that Mr. Marr's book has nothing in there about the Ruby trial transcripts, because none of these books do.
Nobody had it.
No. Vincent Bugliosi's books, the other ones that have come out, all of these books that have been written all these years, including mine before Denial of Justice, did not have the Ruby trial transcripts, those shocking excerpts that I mentioned. So we really need to reevaluate all this, and I'm hoping that this is kind of my contribution to history, and researchers beyond now will take the information that I've provided and take it on and see what else they can find that way. But unless, you know, they have something in there about the Ruby trial transcripts and they include Dorothy Kilgallen in their books and in their articles and all of that, then I don't believe they've done the real job in looking for the truth.
How did Jack Ruby retain Melvin Belli, the attorney to the stars and everything else? How did that happen?
You know, George, sometimes you absolutely amaze me, even though I shouldn't be after all these years. You've hit the most important thing that led me to look into Dorothy Kilgallen's case, because I wrote that book about Melvin Belli. I knew him in the 1980s. I practiced law with him for a little while in San Francisco at his building. He was a blowhard. He was a tort lawyer. He was all these things. And when he died in 96, I decided to write a book about him, and I did. So now I'm doing my research on Belli, and all at once I find out that, yeah, he represented the Rolling Stones and Muhammad Ali and everything, but for God's sakes, he represented Jack Ruby. He'd never even tried a criminal case for about a decade. He'd never tried a capital case. And that's the thing that perked my interest in going forward and looking into how in the world that happened. How did he become Jack Ruby's lawyer? And pretty soon I realized that it could only be through his affiliations with the mafia, because Ruby's other main client was Mickey Cohen, the famous, infamous Los Angeles gangster, and that's what led me into the whole situation with Dorothy Kilgallen, because as you remember, when I was doing the research, I talked to one of his doctor friends in San Diego, and somehow or another we got to Dorothy Kilgallen. He said, you know, Belli knew Dorothy Kilgallen. And I said, what? From What's My Line? And he said, no. He said, you don't know anything about her. And he proceeded to tell me. And he said, you know, when Dorothy died, Mel said to me, well, they've killed Dorothy. Now they'll go after Jack Ruby. And that's what launched my investigation into Dorothy's death.
How easy would it have been to have injected cancer cells into Ruby?
Well, you know, there's been that conjecture that it could have occurred. He was another one who they were fearful, of course, could be a blabbermouth. He was on. Now that we know what happened with the Ruby trial transcripts, that he was in on the assassination, then, boy, the wealth of knowledge that he would have had if he'd have been able to actually tell the truth about what happened at the Warren Commission or otherwise. So he was a target for sure. Now, they had him in the county jail, and he had some illnesses and things like that. People don't know he tried to commit suicide three times. But could it have happened? Could it have happened with Epstein? Yes. Could it have happened with Ruby? Yes. Somehow or another, those enemies, those people who are going to be threatened with exposure, cannot let those people testify. Ruby was not allowed to testify by Belli. They can't let them expose what they know to the world, and one way or another, you've got to shut their mouth, just like they did with Dorothy Kilgallen.
By the way, one thing that's always baffled me, why was it a local murder case in Dallas? Why didn't the feds come in and take over?
Well, they tried to. Oh, they tried to, for sure. And, you know, J. Edgar Hoover just wouldn't let that happen. He basically wanted it to
stay a local case.
Be with the local authorities, and right away he took all of their files. I mean, he had an agenda there, because you have to remember, if this was a plot to kill the president and the mafia was involved and everything else, J. Edgar Hoover should have known about that.
That's right.
But if it's some crazy nut that did this, then there's no responsibility. And, boy, he was a smart guy.
Hoover hated Kennedy anyway, didn't he?
Oh, absolutely. All of them, especially Bobby. So we just got baffled by that. I missed it. Everybody missed it. But now, hopefully, with these Ruby trial transcripts, it will make a difference for sure.
What are the odds, do you think, of getting this forced DNA going?
I feel like I've got at least a 50-50 chance. I did a little research looking into this court. And they've got a reputation. I found a lawyer in that area and talked to him. They've got a reputation for being a pretty strong, truthful, I don't know which judge. They haven't appointed one yet, but I think I've got a shot at it. Cyril Weck's involvement helps me, and it's a 135-page petition, George. It's up on the Internet. It's public record. I put everything in there I could think of to try to say this in the interest of justice, you know. Am I the right person to be filing this? No, probably a member of the family should be. But in the interest of justice, and so that Ron Pataki doesn't get away with murder, come on, let's go ahead and have this DNA comparison. Because if we can do that, then I'm really sure I'm going to get my grand jury investigation. And that's what I want, and I think that's what Dorothy Kilgallen wants.
But he's already admitted that he knew her, that he was involved with her. So what will the DNA prove?
It will prove that he is telling the truth, which is unusual for him, that he was the last person to see her. And if we can put him in the room with Dorothy Kilgallen when she died, then that, by God, it ought to be enough to be able to get a grand jury convened by either the New York District Attorney's Office, the Attorney General's Office, the DA, the Attorney General's Office, or the U.S. Attorney. And I believe that if we can get that DNA match, that's what we'll get.
Well, he might say, all right, you're right, I was with her before she died, but I left. I don't know what happened.
True. But you've got this laundry list of all, I think I put, I don't know how many points of interest with regard to all of his incriminating statements, the poems that talk about how she died, that only the killer could know, all the inconsistencies with regard to what he said. He attended, he admitted attending an assassin school in Central America. All of the arrests for violence, all of these things, they mount up. And hopefully with this DNA, you know, I understand your concerns about that, but with this DNA match, hopefully we will get this grand jury investigation.
Let's go to John in Alliance, Ohio. Welcome to the program, John.
In a short call, it's hard to give some references that will help open people's eyes, but I think that's the only way to do this. If people will just check out globalresearch.ca, they have a lot of former CIA, FBI types who've reformed their way of thinking and practice since being in that, and have become whistleblowers against this CIA, FBI, Murder Incorporated. And I think until we begin to understand that that also includes the media, that is really strongly infiltrated and controlled by the CIA, according to Senate and congressional committees of the 70s, that has become even more strongly this control. And check out, for instance, Global Crimes, Gladio, Gladio Crimes of the U.S., a wonderful article that brings together all the dirty crimes of the CIA and the FBI, the military-industrial complex, and the Wall Street interest that killed Kennedy, JFK, RFK, and MLK. And I think you're pulling out a very valuable thread here. But at the same time, the media's control by the CIA has been covering this up for decades.
Not all of them. Not all of them, John. Not this show.
Dominant. For instance, Mark Lane, you mentioned, he sued for his Freedom of Information Act records from the CIA after a long battle. He finally got them, and he got the information, though highly redacted. But it showed that the director of the CIA had ordered all of their CIA propaganda assets throughout all of the media to trash Mark Lane and gave them the methods to do it. See, he was only in it for the money. They invented that ugly little two-word cliché conspiracy theories to apply to anyone who questions the official version of anything, to, in effect, demonize them and cause them to fear that they're going to be called crazy.
Well, I'm sure there's no question that they have been involved in things like that and continue to be, Mark.
Well, you know, again, what you were going to say, exactly what I was going to say, I have such respect for you because your program tells it like it is. And there will be people that won't be happy with your having me on the program or others, guests that you do or whatever, but you bring it all out there, and that's what we need. Now, you know, I don't think it was Albert Einstein or somebody who made that quote about always question authority. So it doesn't matter whether these websites are looked at or what I'm saying or what anybody is saying. We always want to question authority because we know that at times, you know, we're not getting the full truth. I go back to Dorothy being the role model for the kind of reporter that we want. I think she would be very impressed and respectful of you, George, and others like you, because that's what she did. She went out and found the facts, or she presented the facts, and then let people make up their own mind. I've tried to do that with my books. They're stop and think books.
Great books. I'd like to stump her on what's my line. She'd never guess what I did.
There you go. Exactly.
Let's go to Linda Maria in Medford, Oregon. We'll squeeze you in, Linda. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi, George.
Hi.
Hi, Mark.
Yes.
I'm wondering if you've asked a medium to ask Dorothy what happened. How'd she die? And for that matter, ask JFK and Jeffrey Epstein as well.
Well, we've got a lot of mediums that we could refer to you, Mark. You never know.
Well, I will tell you, it has been suggested to me, and at one point there was a man that I talked to who thought he could put me in touch with Dorothy and all of that. I thought about that for a while and kind of felt like that wasn't the right one to do that with. But I have had emails from those people who do connect others still living with those who are not. And they have told me that, you know, Dorothy is happy with what I'm doing. She praises what I'm doing. She's a little scared for me at times because I'm making some enemies here and there with some powerful people. But at some point, I've been told about someone in New York that apparently is very well respected. And if I get out there for a hearing on this petition, I certainly may get in touch there because I would like to find out if something like that could occur. I'm not adverse to doing so at all.
You stay safe, Mark, and you always have a home here, okay?
Hey, George, thank you so much. You're a good man.
Mark Shaw, latest book, Denial of Justice,